I'm joined by two aficionados and performers of The Recorder. Once again, I'd like to welcome Dr. Karen Woodworth of the Kalamazoo Recorder Players and David Fisher of the Kalamazoo Recorder Players to talk about their Sunday concert. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
The concert is Sunday at The Fountains.
Yes, The Fountains at Bronson Place, and it's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Admission is free. It is open to the public, and we're hoping a lot of people will want to come and hear us play recorder.
For people who aren't quite sure where that is, where do we find that in Kalamazoo?
All right. Well, it's at 1700 Bronson Way, which is kind of off Croydon Avenue. I've heard it described as being near Rose Arbor Hospice. Mm-hmm.
Even near Kalamazoo 10.
Right
around there. That's the usual landmark.
Yeah. So now we are a little oriented on where that is. It's a beautiful facility. Will you be performing? I believe they have both a beautiful foyer with a couple of floors of open space and a chamber concert room as well. Do you know where you'll be? Will we find you on Sunday?
Well, I've been told it's the auditorium.
Wonderful.
So that's on the second floor. A little bit of a mystery. Yes, second floor.
Okay.
I'm sure you'll have no trouble finding it once you get there.
And how does the concert season of the Kalamazoo Recorder Players generally work?
Well, we do a public concert every other year. So if you miss our concert this year, you won't be able to hear a full concert until 2019. Because in the even-numbered years, we do school tours in the spring. We really want to share our music with people and inspire other people to play recorder. And we especially want to support all the young people in town who are learning recorder in class and let them know that there is a future with a recorder. Otherwise, you might see us performing during the year at Art Hop. We typically do that. We have also performed at Sarkozy's Toast and Jams in the spring to celebrate Play the Recorder Month. Mm-hmm. And so you could see us sporadically around town, but the full-length concert really only happens every other year in the spring.
How long have you been the director of Kalamazoo Recorder Players?
You know, it seems like just a couple of years, but it really is more like 10 or 11 years. Yeah. So the time has just flown by. They're a great group to work with.
And I believe, David, you've been involved with the Players even longer.
Oh, yes. It goes back to the mid-70s.
Well, that's a long time.
Yeah.
This Kalamazoo group or as a player yourself?
Oh, as a player.
Yeah.
I learned to play recorder when I was going to engineering school at University of Michigan. I needed something to offset the tedium of studying straight engineering courses. So I taught myself recorder. And then when I got back to Kalamazoo, eventually I heard about Wind Forest Ensemble. And I went to one of their concerts, and they told me, no, I can't join their group. It's a closed group. But there was the Kalamazoo Recorder Players. So that fall, I started in with Recorder Players, and by virtue of 1 year's perfect attendance, they made me president.
Well done.
So,
I don't know. Do we still have that criteria? Yeah, no, the Kalamazoo Recorder Players has been around for around 42 years.
Incredible.
So, you know, it's one of those mists of time things, but we think it's pretty close to 42 years. And, of course, Judy Whaley was the original director. She did that for 30 years.
What might surprise people, I think, about playing the recorder is there's a wealth of music to choose from, and much of it is written by some of the greatest composers of times past.
Oh, yeah. In the late Baroque period, a lot of that was specifically written for recorder.
Yeah.
All the sonatas, trio sonatas, etc., specifically for recorder. And if it wasn't written for recorder, we are not above borrowing, stealing, appropriating anything that fits. And, of course, from the Renaissance period, prior to that, music wasn't really intended for any specific instrument. So if it fits the recorder, it's fair game.
Yeah, and the recorder has a really nice range. We've got multiple sizes of recorders. A lot of them correspond quite well to vocal ranges. So
exactly. You can acquire many recorders.
Oh, yes, you can.
Oh, it's easy, yes.
From those tiny little cute ones to the really, really big ones.
So for those of you who are collectors, you can also find a lot to enjoy in recorders. Back to the music, though, there's plenty of flashy solo stuff, but I love the fact that some of the core pieces for recorder, or the era of recorder, involves social music making, and consorts is the word that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Maybe you can elaborate on that, Karen.
Yeah, you know, the consort is basically, I'm not going to be able to give you a word on definition right now, but just the idea of playing recorders is kind of a convivial atmosphere, I think, goes to what you're talking about. And there is a bit of a social aspect, too, to our group, although perhaps not as much as the players would want, because we do have to settle in and rehearse. But we're always looking for, you know, ways there. We do have some fun things that go on, too. What we have is basically a group of, well, our organization is about 20 members, but we'll have 14 members that are playing on the concert. Some of our other members just aren't able to play this spring for various reasons. And our concert's called Images of Place and Time, and that's a title that came after really looking at what we were playing, because I realized that these pieces are all really evocative of a certain place or a certain time. So I want to talk a little bit about the first piece that we're going to open the concert with.
Yeah.
It's one that was originally written for a consort of viols, and I guess a consort we could kind of define as a chamber group.
Yeah, that's all I was thinking. Right. And the fact that if I've seen original music from that area for consort, and mm-hmm. I love that it's written on four sides of the page, so you place it on a table and you pull up a chair each side of the table and you can read your part from the music.
Oh, yeah. That was a great innovation in printing, that they printed the music like that. And you see paintings of people mm-hmm. doing that.
Yeah. Convivial. And there's wine stains.
Yeah. Anyway, so our first piece we're going to do was composed by Christopher Tye. Now, he was really a 16th century composer. They think he was born around 1505 because he got a Bachelor of Music degree from Cambridge University in 1536. And, you know, I just found that really fascinating because I thought, wait, really a Bachelor of Music degree? They had that back then? But, oh, yeah, they did. So
I wouldn't know what they would. I would love to go to school back then and see what kind of music education. Well, you would too.
Oh, yeah,
being a scholar.
Yeah, and so then he was thought to be part of Edward VI of England's musical establishment. He was later the choir director at Ely Cathedral, and he composed 24 pieces in the genre that's known as the In Nomine. And we're playing his 12th In Nomine. And people often wonder, well, why is it called In Nomine? In fact, that question has actually come up at one of our Kalamazoo Recorder Players meetings. Why is it an In Nomine? And so I love this story because these In Nomine pieces are all based on a little music quotation from a mass composed in the early 16th century by John Taverner. And the music set the phrase In Nomine Domini. And for some reason, there are various theories, this theme was picked up and used by English composers over the next 150 years. And Christopher Tye wrote the most of them. He wrote 24 In Nomines. And so basically what they do is they take that tune, they use it as, and you'll flash back to music history, a cantus firmus, or in other words, a tune that's just set in long notes throughout the piece, and the rest of the parts are written around it. So it's very polyphonic.
Maybe he was just trying to get rid of an earworm.
Could be.
He went to the John Taverner Mass. In Nomine got stuck in his head, and he spent his life trying to get rid of it by writing different In Nomine pieces.
It could be. Or it could have been a competition or a way of paying homage to Taverner, or, you know, I can do that better than you can. But yeah, so all these ones have different moods to them. And the one that we've picked has gotten the little subtitle Cry, because it's thought to imitate the calls of a street hawker. So, you know, somebody who wants your business. So say, come buy my strawberries or something.
Once again, the Kalamazoo Recorder Players will perform Sunday at 3:00 at the Fountains at Bronson Place. It's a free concert and begins with this Christopher Tye In Nomine. We'll hear the Flanders Recorder Consort. Thank you. That's music of Christopher Tai, who my guest Karen Woodworth said graduated with a bachelor's of music in 1536.
Yep.
And what was the college again?
Cambridge University.
Cambridge University. Well, I like that piece very much. Just how many recorders accomplished that piece? How many did it take to fill it out? Is that a four part or a three
part?
Well,
yeah, it's actually five parts, but one part is that in nomine tune. And so we are very fortunate to be joined on this concert by viola da gamba player Mary Ross. She plays in several ensembles around town, including Western's Collegium Musicum. And so she'll be playing those long notes. So you will be able to hear that Cantus Firmus tune because the timbre will make it stick out. And then we have 14 recorder players split up among four different parts.
I have to ask, maybe David, if it's a little difficult sometimes to take your part home and practice if it's not the melody part. And that is the case with a lot of the consort music. You're playing the third or something other than the melody.
On the in nomine, I am playing the top part. So I've got the, quote, melody a large part of the time. But if there are other parts, they have their own little melody, like phrases. It's not like a truly treble dominated piece where you have the melody on top and pure accompaniment below. The Renaissance composers generally managed to give everybody a decent part.
Yeah, and of course, this is polyphonic, which, you know, you could translate as many voices. But what it really means is that each part is kind of independent. They're doing imitative things, but they all get the melody, except for that poor person stuck playing the long notes. So thank you very much, Mary, for playing those.
It does make a difference, though. It really holds everybody together. It gives you a harmonic underpinning for the whole thing.
Is this a good place to use the term contrapuntal as well?
Yeah. Contrapuntal means counterpoint, and so that's related to polyphony as well. So this is a very contrapuntal piece.
And that's what makes it so satisfying even today, I think, for players. Players who don't have to necessarily prefer early music, this kind of writing shows up in modern music as well, as I think you will on display in this concert.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I always think the most simple form of counterpoint is like a round. And, you know, if you think of something, singing something like Row, Row, Row Your Boat, you know, isn't it a lot of fun to everybody be singing the same thing but a different time, and then it creates new music by itself. And
right.
Same concept.
And you have to be both independent and listening to your musical partners.
Yeah. So we're actually pairing this one on the concert with a much more contemporary piece written in the 20th century, specifically for recorders, because one of the other things we're doing with this concert is highlighting pieces from the American Recorder Society members' library. That is one of the benefits of belonging to the American Recorder Society, is that they send you pieces of music along with your subscription. And at this point, it's basically four pieces of music a year. Now, some of the early pieces don't put the composition years on them, so I don't know when this one was composed, but it's called Tracings in the Snow in Central Park. It's by Robert W. Butts, who got his master's degree in musicology from the University of Iowa in 1989. So, and he wrote these pieces in January. He says, these pieces were sketched one January morning over coffee in a small cafe in New York. I'd wandered through Central Park with a friend the morning after a light snowfall and was intrigued with the patterns the icy dusting had made. Those sketches quickly became these two movements. They're built upon short ideas that are explored from different perspectives. So this one has it's not as contrapuntal, but it definitely has the challenges of you have to be just spot on in your part and not really able to key into what the other people are doing, but the music it produces is just wonderful. And it's never been recorded, as far as I can tell.
And again, it came from the magazine that is published by the Recorder Society.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That reminds me of some magazines I have from my grandparents, Etude magazine.
Oh, that was another great one.
Which had music published all the time. Every episode or every release had plenty of sheet music to play in the back of the magazine.
Yeah, you got those informative articles, and then you could sit down at the piano and play these and know that all across the country, people were sitting down and playing those same pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, another thing I want to say about these members library pieces is that the current editor is Glenn Shannon, and he's actually a composer who's going to be featured on our concert by two of our small groups that are playing, because we're featuring the Troubadours and the Antwerp Ensemble, and David is actually a member of both of those groups.
Really? You're double duty.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Rick Johnson and I are both members of both groups. And
why were they created, these subgroups?
Basically, a lot of recorder players have the urge to do more than just come to the regular monthly meetings, and they want to play more music and actually do public performance on a more regular basis. And so we have ensembles that we try to meet every week.
So a little more often.
But yeah, because Carrie Peebles
life gets
once a
in
month.
The way of our rehearsal schedule sometimes.
Where is your favorite place to practice and to play? And do you have a room in the house that...
That's
really...
a tricky question, isn't
yeah.
it?
You're right. Well, the Troubadours, for instance, we meet in Jan Yoon's kitchen. And she folds the table down and puts it off to the side. And so we're four of us in a circle, real close. The acoustics are a little bit on the lively side. It's a wonderful place to play. The Antwerp Ensemble meets in Barbara Hong's music room.
Mm.
That's the designated playing spot in her home.
Barbara Hong was on the radio with me yesterday. She's a pianist, not a recorder
yes.
player, right?
Right.
Yep.
Well, the Antwerp Ensemble specializes in trio sonatas, which is... It requires four people for a trio sonata, two recorder players, a keyboard instrument, and viola da gamba, or cello. In our case, Mary Ross prefers viola da gamba, so that's what we use for our string instrument.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, because the trio sonata discussion is coming up.
I'm sorry. I will stop talking about it.
I prompted you to asking about Barbara and her keyboard. Yeah.
Yes. And David, do you want to talk about the members of the Troubadours? Because I think another one of them was also on here yesterday morning.
Yes. Paula.
Paula Jameson.
Paula Jameson
of
was
course.
On yesterday morning.
As a representative of the Ladies Library
right.
Association. We should, at just this point, I'm going to take a moment to say they're performing Friday night at 7:30, and the Kalamazoo Recorder Players are Sunday at 3 o'clock.
At 3 o'clock at the Fountains of Bronson Place.
Right. So you can support both concerts, in fact.
This is a busy week.
They all are, David. It's hard to choose. Well, let's get back to Glenn Shannon, since you mentioned he's the editor of the magazine that that you automatically get a subscription to when you join the
American Recorder Society. The
American Recorder Society. And I know that Glenn Shannon is on the program.
Mm-hmm. David, I'm hoping you can talk a little bit more
yeah.
about him.
Yeah. Glenn Shannon first came to the attention of recorder players some 10 or 12 years ago. One of his compositions won the prize from the Chicago chapter of the American Recorder Society. They have a composition contest every 2 years, I believe, and he has won a number of competitions like that. And since then, he has become the editor of the members' library for the American Recorder Society.
Have you ever met Glenn Shannon?
We have not, although the Antwerp Ensemble did commission a piece from him a number of years back. That was before I got into the group. Everybody contributed, and they... They came up with the fee for his composition, and took a couple tries. They wanted something that was like another piece, but a little bit more difficult and with a more independent viola da gamba part. And that's what they got.
Oh, yeah.
It is a rather unusual piece. It starts out with a four measure movement, first movement.
That's very, very short.
Very short, yes. And it's just a moody little introduction to the rest of the piece. And it just sort of ends up on a high note and leaves you hanging there. And then you slam into the next movement.
So you can tell he's got some really interesting compositional techniques. Now that piece is not going to be performed on the concert this year, although they performed it several years ago. But you guys are doing the Prelude and Fugue number 2.
Yes. That's the Troubadours are doing Prelude and Fugue number 2, which is the his Prelude and Fugue number 1 was the one that won the prize from the Chicago chapter. Number 2 is a little bit less Baroque, a little bit more contemporary. It is still sort of a neo-Baroque style, but some rather sharply accented rhythms. And the fugue part, of course, we particularly enjoy because we get to chase each other up and down the scales and take turns with the same themes. It's just a fun piece to play.
We have an example, maybe not the specific Prelude and Fugue number 2, but we can hear number 1.
Yeah. Again, another exciting thing about our concert is a lot of the music we're playing has never been recorded. So
we'll get a taste of
just a little taste of what it's kind of like.
Okay, here's music of Glenn Shannon. Was music of Glenn Shannon, and we heard a modern prelude and fugue for recorder ensemble, and that's a smaller ensemble within what can be a much larger group, and that's one way the Kalamazoo Recorder Players is configured, with a large group and smaller ensembles.
Mm-hmm. And most of the smaller ensembles are independent. For our ensemble parties each year, we kind of draw names and have these little groups that only exist for that, although maybe some of them go on to become other groups. But I want to point out that Glenn Shannon's piece, as you alluded to, it's a modern prelude and fugue. And of course, prelude and fugue were very popular during the Baroque period. And that's another thing that ties into the title of our program, Images of Place and Time, our concert that will be Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, because it's really a 20th century or maybe a 21st century image of a different time. And the other small group, the Antwerp Ensemble, is going to be playing Glenn Shannon's Trio Sonata in D minor. Again, a trio sonata being a piece originally, very popular in the Baroque period, mm-hmm. and somebody living now going back and writing in that style.
And counterintuitively being actually requiring 4 players than a trio,
right.
As David mentioned before.
It's a trio sonata in that there are 2 independent solo instruments, and then the continuo, which is the combination of harpsichord and a string instrument, to reinforce the bass line of the harpsichord. So that, in one sense, counts as one part.
They're a unit.
Yes.
Yeah, the two players bringing out the bass and a bit of the harmony.
Right.
So that the other two melody players can interact a bit in a sort of polyphonic, contrapuntal way, as we've been talking about. Again, this music's so delightful to play as a musician and to play parts that are not boring.
Right. We'd also like to think it's fun to listen to.
Well, of course, it's it is a feast for the ears.
Right.
There's lots of details and interesting little things that you can follow, many paths to follow as if you're a one tune listener. There's a lot of tunes to follow. Did you have another comment?
We did the trio sonata recently for another group, and when we got to the end of the second movement, people were laughing because of the surprising ending. So there was, you know, they were enjoying it to the extent that instead of sitting there and behaving very sedately, they were just laughing out loud at the humor of the piece.
Again, that's a free concert on Sunday at 3 o'clock for you to come and enjoy a variety of music for recorder ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller groups and larger groups. And I thought we'd probably need to hear a taste of a trio sonata. And you brought along an example, David.
Yes.
This is music of...
Boismartier.
Yes. Who was this composer?
French, late Baroque, active in the... probably in the years just before 1750. That's the time when we have Handel and Bach and Telemann and any number of the big name composers of the day were all active right there at that very last end of the period.
And
the last hurrah for
the
Baroque.
Right.
I believe... I've read that and there's a surprising amount of contemporary sort of bitching about Boismartier and his popularity with audiences and musicians, that he was making so much money as a self-published
player. Oh, well, that's terrible.
Must be a sellout, right?
Well, let's hear a little bit of this horrible but very popular musician, according to... smarter people of the day. We will hear at L'Ensemble Portique in this recording. We're listening to a trio sonata with members of the Kalamazoo Recorder Players, Karen Woodworth, the director, and longtime member and soloist, David Fisher. And we were discussing right before that what we actually heard, which was a solo recorder and a bit of cello-sounding instrument, which would be viola da gamba, mm-hmm. and in that case, a harpsichord.
Yes, and there's supposed to be a violin in there, too.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
But, of course, the performance that you'll hear on Sunday is two recorders, harpsichord, and viola da gamba.
Okay. Well, we're covering a lot of ground about Sunday's program. Let's remind listeners again, it's at 3 o'clock, and it's open to the public. And it'll be held at the Bronson.
The fountains at Bronson Place.
The fountains at Bronson Place.
Yep. Yeah, and although that was a Baroque trio sonata, we'll be hearing a contemporary trio sonata. And really, the rest of the music that we have talked about on the program is 20th century. We're doing some arrangements, some that are original for recorders. And the next piece I want to talk about was written by a Hungarian composer. I am not 100% sure of the pronunciation of his name, so anybody who is can certainly let me know afterwards the real way to pronounce it, hopefully before Sunday. Matthias Schieber, his dance suite number one. It's taken as arrangements for recorder of little piano pieces, and they're so fun. He's not as well-known a composer in our country, but he was born in Hungary on May 4th, 1905, so this is his birthday month.
Wow.
He unfortunately died early in a car accident on September 24th, 1960. He started out studying piano, and then he studied cello, and eventually he studied composition with Zoltán Kodály. I think it was at the Franz Liszt Conservatory, but I'm not completely sure. And you may know that Kodály, in addition to all his wonderful music pedagogical work and compositions, also collected folk songs. He made these expeditions around Hungary, collecting them, and Schieber went along with him. So he had that background. Interestingly enough, around 1926, he decided to take a position on a cruise ship going to North and South America, playing cello in the orchestra. So he got very interested in jazz, and you'll hear some of that in the music that we're going to play on Sunday. You know, with all the nastiness that started to happen in that area before World War II, he ended up moving to the UK in 1935, settled in London, and became really integrated into the musical scene there and taught at one of the universities.
1926 on a cruise ship, that would have been a very exciting time
to
be mingling with on many ports. What a great story and biography he has. The pieces are based on sort of simple works for piano or even two pianos, I think. And that reminds me also of Bartók, who wrote whole albums of pieces for children. And Bartók, Kodály, Schieber, they're very much part of an unusual and very distinct way of approaching music in the early 20th century.
Oh, definitely. And Bartók also had gone out and collected those. In fact, I think it's Bartók that we have the great photographs of him with I want to say gramophone. I don't think that's what it was, but it had the big horn and lines of people standing waiting to sing their folk songs into it.
Yeah, wax cylinder recorders.
Yeah, thank you.
Must have been very heavy and hard to get over the mountains of Carpathia or Transylvania or wherever he was hiking to find these original singers of great ancient songs. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this dance suite is really fun for us to play, though. We're playing three pieces. I mean, it's just got the three movements. So there's an Argentine tango, there's a short ragtime piece, and there's a slow fox. So again, really images of place and time, which is our concert title. You know, they do kind of take us back to maybe that 1920s era.
Well, let's give a few of these a listen. I'm with Karen Woodworth and David Fisher of the Kalamazoo Recorder Players. Their concert is Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Fountains at Bronson Place.
Thank you.
short and sweet, those little dances for piano in the recording we have. But Karen, these have been arranged for recorders.
Yep, arranged for recorders called the Dance Suite Number 1. David, I believe you said there are 3 dance suites total featuring his music.
Yes.
Probably all taken from that one set of piano duets, but they're just so much fun to play. We're pairing that up with a dance that was written especially for recorders in 2009. It's another one of our ARS members library pieces called the Belmont Street Bergamasca. And it's written by Sean Nolan. He's a recorder and Baroque flute player living in Portland, Oregon. And so a lot of our music that we play is SATB, in other words, soprano, alto, tenor, bass. You get to hear all 4 sizes of the recorders. But the soprano, with its high pitch, can sometimes overpower power a piece. Well, maybe that's not the right word, but it grabs your ear just kind of naturally. And this Belmont Street Bergamasca does not use a soprano. It's for alto, tenor, and bass.
So we'll get a more mellow sound.
Yeah, definitely. And so that title, Bergamasca, again, you're thinking, wait, isn't that a Baroque title? Again, our concert's Images of Place and Time, and this one I really like because it kind of covers both of those. A Bergamasca, or a Bergamasque, you might hear it like that, is a dance with an associated melody and chord progression that takes its name from the town of Bergamo in Italy. Not sure if it originated there or if it was just a way to portray the Bergamo residents.
I like to picture a dance craze started in Bergamo.
Yeah. Oh, well, this one sounds like a lot of fun. It's been described as a circle courtship dance for couples. Ooh. The music is very repetitive. It's all based on a 1-4-5-1 chord progression that repeats and repeats and repeats, but with variations. And so it's a circle courtship dance for couples. The men circled forward and the women circled backward until the melody changed. The partners then embraced, turned a few steps, and began again.
Well, I see that it's about 4 minutes to the top of the hour, and we have a news update at 11:01. So I will have to just ask you to maybe give us a preview of the final pieces on the concert and remind listeners once again about the Kalamazoo Recorder Players concert and where it is.
Okay. Yeah, we've got 2 really nice evocative pieces in the middle of the concert, Song of the Heather, and then one that I think most people will know, which is Debussy's Reverie. Both of those are special winners of the ARS's 75 competition. So come hear Debussy's Reverie, arranged solely for recorder orchestra. Our concert's Images of Place and Time, the Kalamazoo Recorder Players, this Sunday at 3:00 at the Fountains at Bronson Place, and it's absolutely free. We'd love to see you there.
Karen Woodworth is the director of the Kalamazoo Recorder Players, and David Fisher, thank you so much for coming as well. And
you're quite welcome.
I hope you have a great concert on Sunday. Here's a bit of the Debussy Reverie.
Thanks.
Thank you.